This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. President Trump told reporters in the Oval Office why the National Guard's needed in Portland, Oregon.
Portland is on fire. Portland's been on fire for years.
But Portland's police chief tells ABC News nightly protests around an ICE facility are just one block of a 145-square-mile city, and he says that typically 20 to 25 people are involved. A federal judge in Oregon blocked the deployment for now of troops to Portland. Another federal judge declined to immediately block National Guard troops from going to Chicago. Governor of Illinois and mayor of Chicago sued to try to stop the Trump administration's deployment of National Guard troops from Texas. The president said the talks are ongoing with Democrats over a deal to end the government shutdown, but no indication from Democrats that they're talking about an agreement. Indirect talks are taking place in Egypt involving Israel and Hamas, focusing on the U.S. proposal to stop the fighting. This is ABC News.
Start your day with me, Pam Yonke, every morning with the Midwest Farm Report, right here on 107.7 WRCE.
For WRCE 107.7, I'm Joanne Krulotz. The Richland Hospital and Clinics recently received recognition as a Checkpoint top performer from the Wisconsin Hospital Association. Checkpoint is Wisconsin's voluntary hospital quality reporting program, featuring over 45 publicly available measures that reflect performance in safety, quality, and patient outcomes. All acute care and critical access hospitals across the state participate, reporting on metrics that matter most to their communities. These reports are designed to support ongoing quality improvement efforts and to promote transparency for patients and providers. Earning top performer status means TRHC ranks in the top 10% statewide in the following categories: birth, infections, patient experience, patient safety for all patients, patient safety for patients with surgery, and perinatal. One of Wisconsin's largest convenience store chains will no longer take or offer pennies. Quick Trip announced Thursday that it is following guidance from the U.S. Department of Treasury, which is phasing out production of 1-cent coins. Instead, Quick Trip will simply be rounding down all its cash sales to the nearest 5 cents. Digital and card sales will remain unaffected. A proposed bill seeking to crack down on people falsely misrepresenting their pets as service animals was heard in a state assembly committee this week. The legislation would implement a $500 fine for providing false documentation to obtain a service animal. It could also fine health care providers who prescribe an emotional support animal to patients who have been in their care for less than 30 days. Critics of the legislation say enforcing the law would be especially challenging due to concerns over legal troubles with privacy. For WRCE News, I'm Joanne Krulotz.
The Brewers and the Cubs tonight. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports from American Family Field, where it's game two of the National League Divisional Playoffs. The Brewers winning game one, 9-3. Jackson Chourio is playing tonight despite a scare with a hamstring injury. Pat Murphy.
The MRI came back and it's inconclusive and it's not a serious hamstring strain.
The Brewers jumped out to a 6-1 lead in the first inning Saturday. Cubs manager Craig Counsell.
Look, the game got away from us early, so it's not like it did, right? It got away from us, so... And it's a loss, and you move on from it quickly. There's no penalty. It's one loss. Doesn't count for more how you lose. We didn't lose well, but we lost, and you move on. That's how the clubhouse felt.
NBA, the Bucks are in Miami for a preseason game against the Heat. Giannis is now with the team after a bout with COVID.
He took a toll on my body. I'm not 100% yet physically. Take it day by day, get back in shape.
That's Giannis Antetokounmpo with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Catch Farm Report updates throughout the day from the Midwest Farm Report, right here on 107.7 WRCE.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Maybe an evening shower, otherwise partly cloudy tonight, a low in the mid-40s. Sunshine for tomorrow, highs in the upper 60s, and mid-60s for highs with sun on Wednesday. Slight chance for showers on Thursday, highs staying in the 60s. Currently it's 56.
Matinee on Air.
He joins us every Friday at this time for some recombobulation. He is also Civic Media's political editor. Dan Schaefer is here.
Tom Tiffany has made it official. He is running for governor. I think he is a Trump endorsement and a strong fundraising quarter away from clearing the field.
Well, but Tony Weed has endorsed him, which is like being Trump adjacent.
It's like the transitive property of endorsements.
Yes.
The 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, only just sad.
Matinee on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. The Todd Allbaugh Show.
State Representative Ahmaud Rivera-Wagner talking about this new piece of legislation in regards to housing. And who have you reached across the aisle and worked with on this issue?
I worked with folks like Rep. Armstrong, who our districts couldn't look any different. But when you center the actual experiences of your district, not your political parties, but the things that people need, there's a lot more alignment and possibility when that is the centerpiece.
The Todd Allbaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station. And on the app, Todd Allbaugh.
Hey, everybody. Homeless veterans are facing a crisis in Chippewa Falls, and Brittany Carlone from Wisconsin Watch will be here to tell us a solution on the horizon and the Brewers' results and more. Join us.
The Todd Allbaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4. News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
They wish to break the entire thing. That is the objective. It isn't about efficiency. It's about breaking it. And it's about breaking it for what end?
Now, the Maggie Dawn Show continues.
Gerrymandering is bad for everybody.
From Congress and courts to burgers and baseball.
I'm grossly discouraged, and I have given up on any justice in our system. It doesn't exist anymore.
Once again, here's lawyer and economist Maggie Dawn.
Never give up. You can find justice and hope here every day. And I've got just the amazing guest to bring it to you this afternoon. She is the incomparable Congresswoman Gwen Moore. Welcome back from Wisconsin's fighting 4th Congressional District. Good to have you with us, Congresswoman.
Absolutely. And I'm at home today, but I have my flight ready to go back to the District of Columbia tomorrow morning to be prepared for any kind of breakthroughs regarding this shutdown.
You're ready to get back to work. Apparently, Speaker Mike Johnson is not really ready to get back to work. He put the House in recess Thursday, Friday last week, which pretty shocking. He did it the days leading up to the shutdown. The shutdown continues. And then surprisingly, I found out this weekend, he's like, yeah, House members, you don't need to come back to D.C. at all this week, basically keeping the House in recess for this entire week. What is going on with Speaker Johnson? I don't know. He doesn't seem well to me these days.
Well, you know, he is a speaker in name only. I mean, the Speaker of the House is Donald John Trump.
Yes.
Really, be clear about that, Maggie. But the Republicans have experts and pollsters and so on that are telling them that their message that the Democrats are shutting the government down is something that they are willing to believe. Some of the Republicans are very nervous about shutting out, particularly with the Affordable Care Act, the ACA premium credits. And
yes,
if you look at a map of the United States, you're going to see it is blood red every place that the Affordable Care Act is going to have the greatest impact on people. But their theory of the case is that that they can blame Democrats for not voting for their one big beautiful bill that it's taken $1 trillion out of Medicaid, did not advance these premiums, and, you know, puts $500 billion of Medicare at risk. They're betting on that.
It's an insane gambit, unless you figure that you can lie to the American people and that the American people are stupid enough to buy the lie. I think that the Democrats' narrow focus, they've basically, as I understand it, Congresswoman, been making one clear demand. This is this thing. It is, we want the ACA subsidies to the funding level to be returned to where it was before the big, brutal bill. Because come November 1st, when folks like farmers, small business owners, folks that were lucky enough to retire early, folks in the service worker industry, and the millions and millions of Americans who do not have employer-provided health insurance, when they log on to those ACA exchanges on November 1st to go try to find health insurance, what they're going to find in many circumstances are premiums that are double or triple what they were paying last year, and many will simply not get insurance. It is economically impossible, which is then having spillover effects right now with the carriers that are even willing to provide coverage through the ACAs. We saw this in Wisconsin, Congresswoman. We know that Common Ground has dropped out of the ACA exchange because they understand that the premium increase that they are willing to permit or charge their customers is not enough for them to deal with more lives under their carrier umbrella, but sicker folks. So people, it's this first impact, but it's also the knock-on impacts for the carriers themselves. I think this is just the first wave of premium increases. It will cascade throughout our economy. It is only going to get worse. This is what Democrats have said. Restore the ACA subsidy or credit. Then we'll put the government back in. We'll bring it back. I haven't heard Republicans address the substance of that argument at all, Congresswoman, except to say, we'll talk about that later. Have you heard any substantive response from Republicans?
Their response is that we can do this by November 21st. But as you've pointed out, the notices will have gone out on this. You know, the Republicans were too clever by half.
Yes.
When they cut Medicaid by over $1 trillion and had those cuts come into effect after the 2026 election.
Yes.
And they slapped the fact that not only, as you pointed out very well in your economic lawyer setup, whatever you call it, you pointed out very clearly that number one, the ACA credit is going to have impact on anybody who's an entrepreneur, or anybody who doesn't work for a company. But you also pointed out that it's going to have a contagion impact.
Yes.
So that even if you're working for some company, you know, or getting your premium through your private corporation, HR is going to be sending you that email saying, hey, your share of the premium is going up.
It's going to have many impacts. When people are underinsured or go without insurance at all, they access healthcare through emergency departments. When that happens, again, those costs, if people are unable to pay for it, again, combined with this 1-2 punch of these massive $1 trillion cuts to Medicaid and Medicare, folks that all of us that may be fortunate enough, blessed enough to have insurance, we're going to start seeing those economic impacts. The idea that Republicans at base are saying, completely ignoring the effect of their policies, which is to make Americans lose their health insurance. That is what they're doing.
Well, Maggie, come on now. Let's just do a little history here.
All right.
Okay. They have never liked the medical programs that came under the Social Security Act, Medicaid and Medicare. They have spent the entire career of the GOP trying to get rid of it. They hated the ACA, so-called Obamacare. And as I recall, I lost count after the 60th time.
Right.
They tried to bring it down. I swear I lost count after that. And remember the John McCain thumbs
down? Oh, yeah, the most famous thumbs down on the floor of the Senate ever.
You know, and so, you know, what they're saying is that with the one big, beautiful bounty for billionaires, we have accomplished in one vote what we ain't been able to accomplish since Medicare was created in the 1960s. And they're saying that we are willing to shut down, destroy the government. And if those senators, those Democratic senators, the five or four or five, however many of that they need, if they don't come to the table and give us what we want, we will use this as an excuse to continue with Project 2025 with Stephen Miller at the head of things, firing people, destroying government, turning this into a true autocracy.
Folks, that is Congresswoman Gwen Moore of Wisconsin's 4th Congressional District. You know, at the beginning of this hour, my lead-in music, it has me saying their purpose here is to break it. It's not to make it any better. And what you just articulated is the historical backdrop to that. It is not any more true today than it was when I cut that sound back when the BBB was getting discussed. They are trying to break the ACA. They are trying to break Medicare and Medicaid and ultimately Social Security. And they will then fire gosh knows how many federal workers, which is not necessary in a shutdown at all. This has all been a part of this, basically a long-term, I'm going to call it 40 to 50 year plan of Republicans to effectively dismantle the FDR, post-FDR federal government, right? Like this is, they want the federal government effectively gone out of any sort of major role other than defense. They'll still spend money on defense and those sorts
Department
of things.
War. Yeah.
Ooh, Lord. I already had a meltdown about whatever that was that happened at Quantico a couple weeks ago because it was truly mind-blowing. I'm going to give props to the silence that the generals greeted all of that nonsense with. That was the only little sliver of hope in those presentations. Let me ask you a bit about the fact that Mike Johnson continues to keep the House in recess, which should tell everybody all they need to know about how serious Republicans are about getting the government back up and running. But a smaller story that I don't know that everybody is hearing about is the fact that on October 6th, in a special election, Adelita Grijalva was elected as a congresswoman for Arizona's 7th Congressional District. She's a Democrat. She's replacing her father, who died while in office. She's from Tucson. She's the first Latina to represent Arizona in Congress. So important. Longtime member of the Tucson School Board. She would be the 218th signature for that pesky discharge petition that would force Donald Trump's administration to turn over and release all of the files for the Epstein investigation. So Mike Johnson, I guess, has actually no interest in seeing what is true about Jeffrey Epstein and all of his powerful friends and what they did or did not do, nor is he actually serious about opening up the government. What do you make of his failure to swear her in?
Well, I'll tell you, Maggie, I have never, ever seen a member not sworn in before the actual certification comes in. There are absolutely no contests or no claims that she did not win in Arizona.
Right.
I've never, it's a pure political play, just like shutting the government down. They're in power and they are abusing it in every aspect that they can. In terms of the Epstein files, you know, you got to look at people like Marjorie Taylor Greene, you know, who's a shiro in this instance. And, you know, Republicans who have started this discharge petition because we'd have never been able to get 218 had there not been Republican signatories on it. And so it seems like Americans, no matter what their political philosophy is, really want to know the truth about the Epstein files. This is a, you know, we still have a democracy. This is
yes.
And you know, it's just this nasty little thing. That 218 is a nasty little thing.
And it's not going away. Americans want the truth. We can handle the truth, unlike what the character Jack Nicholson said in A Few Good Men. You know, the pettiness of not swearing her in.
Oh, but it's not petty. Oh,
but the seriousness, but the seriousness of its impact. Exactly. You and I are of a mind there. He is Mike Johnson wants the government shut down. If he didn't, he wouldn't have sent everybody home. And Mike Johnson doesn't want the Epstein files released, and that's why he hasn't done what I'm going to say is his ministerial duty to swear in the newest congresswoman out of Arizona's fighting 7th Congressional District. We continue this discussion with Wisconsin's Congresswoman Gwen Moore. The fight continues on the other side. Don't go anywhere. I ask her about the couple of Democrats that have broken ranks in the Senate, what she thinks is coming next in the countdown and shutdown fight of 2025. Don't go anywhere. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media.
This is News from the Center, WRCE.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. In recent weeks, the level of activity from Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, has increased quite a bit. There was a raid in Manitowoc at a Walmart parking lot where dairy workers were known to congregate, a series of arrests in Madison, and in Milwaukee, ICE is looking to expand its operations significantly by seeking office space downtown to go along with a new field office on the city's northwest side. This has been concerning for many, and not without reason. A recent large-scale ICE raid in an apartment building in Chicago saw reports of armed federal agents breaking down doors, U.S. citizens detained for hours on end, and children being dragged from their homes in the middle of the night. While the American immigration system has a host of problems, this kind of violent show of force is not an acceptable way to address these problems. And ICE also just received an injection of $45 billion in the One Big Beautiful Bill, so it is imperative for all of us to hold ICE accountable and speak out when things go too far. Right now, things are going way too far.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area.
Why are interscholastic sports called the last classroom of the day? Because they teach students important life lessons like teamwork, accountability, and perseverance. School sports are so much more than a game. They're about developing the whole person. That's why they're an essential part of every student's education.
Encourage your student to participate in the last classroom of the day. Interscholastic sports in Wisconsin. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
As veterans, we're no strangers to helping others.
That's what we were taught, service before self.
But we do have one question for the veterans listening.
When is the last time you reached out for help?
If you or someone you know needs resources, whether it's for stress, finances, employment, or mental health, don't wait. Reach out.
Find more information at va.gov/reach. That's va.gov/reach.
Brought to you by the United States Department of Veterans Affairs and the Ad Council.
Is getting vaccinated on your to-do list? We can help you check that off.
You've got this.
Yes, you do. See how we've got you at yougotthis.usaging.org. A message from the Aging and Disability Vaccination Collaborative, powered by U.S. Aging.
As Wisconsin as a game of cribbage with good friends, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Extremely pleased to be joined this Monday afternoon by Wisconsin Congresswoman Gwen Moore. We've been talking about the shutdown and, frankly, the fact that Mike Johnson looks like a puppet. He acts like a puppet. He is a puppet. I expect his nose to start growing one day, Gwen. You know what I mean? Like, it just the lie. He's sort of the Pinocchio speaker of the House. I don't know what else to say. There are two senators that have voted in these successive votes to reopen the government. They are Senator John Fetterman of Pennsylvania and Senator Catherine Cortez Masto of Nevada. They voted for this clean continuing resolution. What are you hearing? Have you heard any rumbles about other Democratic senators that might be waffling a bit? Or does it seem to you that the Democratic caucus on the Senate side is holding firm?
Well, Maggie, first of all, just let me say of those two senators, you know, I don't pass any negative judgment upon them for their vote. You know, the reality is that keeping the government closed is very risky. It is already causing pain and inconvenience to people. You know, the national parks, you know, one of the things that's a treasure to people, you know, not available. But, you know, you will see this. Now, people did get paid on the 30th of September. The longer this lasts, the more pain that will be doing. And these are, you know, so I don't judge them for their vote. But what I'm reminded of is when I was in sixth grade and I had to bring a nickel every day to Geneva to keep her from beating me up. And my older sister finding out this one day, she did not furnish me with the nickel. And I had to stand up to Geneva. And once I stood up to her, that ended the bullying. And so I think that, you know, the threats are we're going to fire people. They already have been firing people. The Supreme Court has allowed the president unprecedented ability to disrupt careers of people who are under agencies that aren't even a part of the executive branch. Right. You know, this bullying tactic, and they just want to blame it on the Democrats who don't want to deal the final blow, as you pointed out, literally to healthcare. Because it's not just about healthcare for the poorest of the poor. You know, it's about dismantling publicly funded healthcare, you know, which will have an impact on hospitals. There'll be $25 billion a year in uncompensated care. And they are lying.
They lie every day.
For illegal immigrants. They're lying about that in order to sort, they teeing up this lie in order to get the public sentiment around it. And they are saying we are determined that we are going to force Democrats. We're not going to seek the newest member. We're not going to open the government. We're going to force Senate Democrats to go along through history, this historic taking away of healthcare, the greatest takeaway and takedown and shutdown and shutout of healthcare in the history of the United States of America. Democrats, you're going to either do it or we're going to keep the government down. And I just hope that the senators will stay.
I agree with you so much, Congresswoman. You know, the narrowness of the issue, while we understand that these are interrelated issues, that the big brutal bill threatens the sustainability of Medicare and Medicaid, this narrow issue that Democrats are making the demand saying, if you do this, we will reopen the government, is narrow. And it's about working people. It's about farmers and small business owners and folks that may be in graduate programs. But mostly it is the millions and millions of working Americans whose employers do not happen to provide health insurance coverage. These are working people, and Republicans in the MAGA regime, led by a wannabe tin pot dictator, are basically flipping these millions of working Americans the bird and saying, we're going to lie to your face about what's really going on, and we're going to make healthcare unaffordable for you. You can thank us later.
Maggie, you know, just to put it, wrap this in a bow, you know, here's the thing. Even if the Republicans would say, because what has happened has been a breakdown in trust.
Yes.
I mean, you know, we can't be reassured that, you know, what'll happen in November is going to happen. And if the Republicans would make some kind of side deal to try to regain the trust and say that November 21st, we promise to do this and that. We promise to keep our power over the president. Because right now, the president has all the power and there are no guarantees. There is no incentive for these Democrats to flip. You know, the only reason they should flip is if there is some reassurance that they're going to do something about this catastrophic situation with the ACA. And just like you said, we have narrowed the ask.
Yes.
The ACA premiums, as hard as it's going to be to trust them on the other, you know, Medicaid issues, we've narrowed it.
Yes.
You would think there'd be some sort of side deal or something that would get us back, some amendment to even put a date in it and a promise that there will be no rescission activity.
Yeah, it is so bad and their willingness to engage with the actual facts shows everyone that they're lying. I love the fact that Hakeem Jeffries has now challenged Speaker Mike Johnson to a debate on the House floor in primetime televised. Mike Johnson, the Pinocchio, the puppet of Donald Trump. He doesn't have the cojones to do that, I don't think.
I would buy a ticket to that.
Heck yeah, I would be there too, sitting right next to you. Congresswoman Gwen Moore, thank you. Thank you. Folks, we'll be right back on the other side with Jeff Mandel of Law Forward talking about their amicus brief filed today.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
Farm news that impacts you and your community from the Midwest Farm Report throughout your day on 107.7 WRCE.
For WRCE 107.7, I'm Joanne Krulatz. A traffic crash in Richland Center last weekend resulted in an arrest. Richland Center Police Chief Billy Jones reports that on Sunday at approximately 3:50, the Richland County 911 Communications Center received a report of a motor vehicle accident at the intersection of North Jefferson Street and West Union Street in Richland Center. The crash involved a truck and a motorcycle. The caller reported that two individuals had been ejected from the motorcycle and were lying in the roadway. Responding officers from the Richland Center Police Department and the Richland County Sheriff's Office arrived on scene and immediately provided medical assistance until Richland EMS personnel arrived and assumed care of the injured. Richland Fire also responded to provide traffic control and assist with scene security. During the crash investigation, officers detected a strong odor of marijuana coming from the truck involved in the accident. A search of the vehicle was conducted, resulting in the discovery of 438.2 grams of marijuana. As a result, Jake J. Quick was arrested and tentatively charged with possession of marijuana with intent to deliver. Action taken against a lead veterinarian at a southern Wisconsin dog breeding facility. The Veterinary Examining Board of the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection took a unanimous vote Tuesday to suspend the license of Dr. Richard Van Demelen. Van Demelen was previously allowed to keep practicing under certain conditions, but the board held an emergency vote to suspend him after a surprise inspection found issues with record keeping. The breeding facility, Ridgeland Farms in Blue Mounds, has been under scrutiny for years on allegations of mistreatment of animals. For WRCE News, I'm Joanne Krulatz.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabe. Peaky Blinders is the gift that keeps on giving to its loyal fans. Netflix and the BBC have announced that the popular show about the Shelby crime gang is getting a two-season sequel, according to Screen Rant. The period drama, created by Stephen Knight, will have 6 episodes in each season that will air on BBC One in the UK and Netflix worldwide. The new seasons will pick up after the Peaky Blinders movie, also written by Knight, called The Immortal Man. There is no release date yet for the film, which stars Cillian Murphy, Stephen Graham, and Rebecca Ferguson. There were rumors that the movie would be the end of the franchise, but that no longer appears to be the case. Knight says that the show will follow a new generation of Shelbys in the sequel. The Immortal Man will act as a bridge between the original show, which ran for 6 seasons, and the new iteration. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to 107.7 WRCE, home for mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Maybe an evening shower, otherwise partly cloudy tonight, a low in the mid-40s. Sunshine for tomorrow, highs in the upper 60s. And mid-60s for highs with sun on Wednesday. Slight chance for showers on Thursday. Highs staying in the 60s. Currently it's 56.
Where working people come to talk. It's the Rick Smith Show, weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network. Join me for an honest approach to the issues American working families care about. No talking points, no focus groups. Get ready for a heavy dose of democracy, fairness, grit, and no apologies. It's current affairs from a working class labor perspective. Facts are center, science is real, and everyone gets a seat at the table. The Rick Smith Show, weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network.
When it comes to vaping, the truth can get clouded. So let's make it clear. Vaping is not safe for youth.
Because vaping can put microscopic particles into your lungs.
And dangerous things like metals into your body.
And nicotine, which can harm a person's brain development through their mid-20s.
With appealing flavors, high nicotine levels, and lots of promotion on social media.
Many kids think vaping is harmless, but it's not.
So talk to your kids about the risks of vaping.
Because when you talk, they hear you.
Learn more at underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
Jane Matinere and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, Wisconsin farmers, how are they faring? The fabulous farm babe Pam Yonke will join us in hour number two. Don't miss it.
Matinere on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome, everybody, and welcome back if you're rejoining us. Big, big thanks to Congresswoman Gwen Moore for meeting with us today. Always fabulous to have her on, talking all things shut down as it seems to continue to grind on. But other news continues to occur, and we're really excited to have with us this afternoon, my friend and yours, Attorney Jeff Mandel of Law Forward here in Wisconsin. Law Forward has filed an amicus brief today in the Supreme Court's opening term, which just opened today, that has some really important implications for judicial elections, not just here in Wisconsin, but well beyond. Jeff's here to tell us all about it. Welcome back, Jeff. Thanks for making time this afternoon.
Thanks for having me, Maggie. It's always great to be here.
Okay. So this is not a new lawsuit that you filed. You're filing what we call these friend of the court briefs or amicus or amicus briefs. So there was already a piece of litigation that's before the Supreme Court. Tell us what that case is and what it's about, and then we'll get into Law Forward's filing today.
Of course, this is a lawsuit that was filed by Vice President J.D. Vance before he was the vice president, when he was still in the United States Senate. And he filed, along with the National Republican Senate Committee, to undermine campaign finance laws. And what he says is that the limit that exists right now on political parties, the Democratic National Committee, the Republican National Committee, their campaign committees, giving money directly to candidates and their campaigns is unconstitutional. This is the latest in years and years and years of attacks against campaign finance regulations, and specifically against the McCain-Feingold campaign finance bill. And it is deeply unfortunate. I do want to point out that even the federal appellate court in Ohio, a very conservative court, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit,
right,
denied this lawsuit and said, no, these limitations are constitutional. And that opinion was written by highly respected and extremely conservative Judge Jeff Sutton, who for a long time was seen as one of the up-and-coming conservative judges who might be on the U.S. Supreme Court. So this is a pretty out-there theory, but now it's before the U.S. Supreme Court. And with this U.S. Supreme Court, there's a pretty high chance that they will agree with Vice President Vance, and they will strike down this longstanding limit on money going from, right, on money going from the political party itself directly into the campaigns of individual candidates.
Yeah, this is pretty extraordinary. And I say that because in poll after poll after poll, it doesn't matter who's asking, and it doesn't matter who gets asked, right? So source of the poll or respondents, Americans of all political parties and of all viewpoints, basically uniformly to 80%+ consider the amount of money, and especially what I'm going to generically term as money that is hard to identify its source as to, they view these things, that money, dark money, as bad, overwhelmingly so. And yet here we have the vice president of the United States. Admittedly, he filed this lawsuit back when he was a senator, but now the vice president saying in a lawsuit that, no, no, we want more opaqueness. We want less transparency. We want more ability for there to be increasing even greater amounts of money in all sorts of elections and greater coordination amongst political parties to do this on behalf of specific candidates. And folks, and Jeff, I want you to correct me if I'm wrong here, but one of the things that's important for people to recognize is that while we're talking about, yes, this is about political parties coordinating spending to particular candidates, political parties then can take money from all over the place. And it's when we have this sort of trickle down of money through these different organizations and different parties that it becomes so basically impossible to track where this money is coming from, which makes it highly possible for there to be, dare I say, pretty clear corruption. If you are rich enough to cut large enough checks to what I'm going to call these intermediary organizations, you can bypass any direct contribution limits. And this is not good for anybody. Again, it doesn't matter what party you're in.
I think that's exactly right. It is a way around the limits that we have in both state and federal law. And so what our brief today, which we submitted on behalf of former Wisconsin Senator Russ Feingold, right? The Feingold of the McCain-Feingold yes. campaign finance restrictions. What we're saying to the court is you don't have to look farther than Wisconsin to see how dangerous this is. So in Wisconsin, just like at the federal level, there are limits on how much an individual can give to a candidate. The federal limits these days, if you want to give money to Representative Moore, your earlier guest, or yes. to someone running for president of the United States, the federal limits are in the range of a little bit more than $3,000. Here in Wisconsin, for our state elections, the limits are much more generous. If you yes. want to give to your favorite candidate for governor, you can, or Supreme Court, you can give up to $20,000 per person. But what we've done in Wisconsin, and what Senator Vance's lawsuit or Vice President Vance's lawsuit wants to do nationally now, is to say, we're going to take away all the limits on how much you can give a political party and all the limits on how much the political party can then give to an individual campaign. And this is how we've gotten such outrageously and astronomically expensive judicial elections here in Wisconsin. Remember that the 2025 Wisconsin judicial election cost more than $115 million that they've demonstrated so far. The previous record 2 years earlier was $53 million. And the previous record before that, also set in Wisconsin, was $10 million. So what's causing this massive increase is what we're seeing is, as you said, extraordinarily wealthy individuals. I'm not talking about just rich people. We're talking about the richest of the rich who give that limit, give $20,000 to the Supreme Court candidate, but then turn around and give 20 million or 40 or 50 times as much to the party. And then a couple of days later, we see a transfer from the party right to that campaign. And it's just a way around these limits, and it really makes campaign finance reform not work. And the lessons here are quite stark. And what we're saying, and Senator Feingold is saying to the U.S. Supreme Court is, please, please look before you leap and think about this and think about whether you want to see this expanded everywhere else, because it's not working in Wisconsin.
It's shocking to me, Jeff, after we just, in this state, every single Supreme Court race, we see the spending going up and up and up, and everybody hates it. We all say together, all the regular folks that, you know, have bosses, get paychecks, save for retirement, do all those things, worry about bills. All of us regular people, including scads of farmers and small business owners, we look at that and we go, it's not a good thing when, whether it's George Soros or Elon Musk or Mark Zuckerberg or Jeff Bezos, it's not good when they can cut a check for $20 million or $40 million or however much they want to effectively put their finger on the scales, if you will, of both justice indirectly, but the election itself, right? It is currying favor in some, in an arguable way. And now Vice President Vance and presumably Donald Trump want to, of course, get rid of basically any meaningful limit. This is the end of any meaningful limit as we have known it in campaign finance reforms. It will be the same transfers that you describe, but it will be happening everywhere, not just in Wisconsin judicial elections. What do you think we should be doing about this, Jeff?
Well, I mean, unfortunately, there's not a whole lot that we can do, to stop the U.S. Supreme Court. They don't consult opinion polls. We don't get to vote for them. And there's not an opportunity for popular recall or something like that. I will note that you're exactly right, Maggie, that one of the dangers is we are empowering the ultra wealthy to come in and do what they want. But there's a secondary piece of that, and that is that it swamps and leaves out and therefore disempowers the rest of us.
Right.
The people who look at things and say, you know what, I do have a strong opinion about this, but I'm going to do what I can. I'm going to send $100. Right. Well, that $100 becomes effectively meaningless. And it takes ordinary people out of the political process when someone else can give so much. And that is equally pernicious. Because I think one problem is the appearance and the possibility of corruption where the ultra wealthy are buying access. But the other piece of this is it completely excludes the rest of us. And that is not, it is our democracy for all of us. So what can we do? We can express our disgust and our displeasure. We can try to fix things here on the state level, right? Our Wisconsin legislature can change these rules. We could lower the contribution limits in Wisconsin. We could stop allowing these unlimited expenditures from political parties to candidates. That's only been the law here in Wisconsin for a decade, and it could be changed back. And in fact, you don't even have to go back much before that to when we had an experiment. It only lasted one election cycle here in Wisconsin, but we had an experiment with publicly financing our Supreme Court elections so that nobody was able to try to buy justice or overly influence the campaigns. We can go back to doing things like that on the state level, and people who are upset about this, who are disgusted, should be reaching out to their legislators, to their favorite candidates for governor and attorney general, and saying, let's talk about this. Let's put this back on the agenda. Let's make Wisconsin the place that doesn't show the Supreme Court how scary this can be, but shows how well we can do this.
Jeff, it is so important for people, especially folks that supported Donald Trump, that consider themselves good faith Republicans. Our elected leadership needs to hear from you, too. It cannot just be Democrats that are going out there and saying having basically unlimited amounts of money getting washed through political parties. That's basically what it is. And giving directly to candidates. It's bad for democracy and it's bad for regular people. Jeff, you made such an important point, and I just want to hit this again. Just like gerrymandering or completely lopsided electoral districts are bad because folks don't really have to listen to their constituents because they know it's a gimme win for them. This is bad as well. It's the same kind of concept here, that if the billionaire class and the Elon Musks and the Soroses and the Bezoses and the Zuckerbergs with their Zuckerbucks can give unlimited money to parties that can then be filtered down to candidates in an unlimited way, they don't need to care about the little guy and our small donations. It is less democratic by very definition. Thanks so much to Jeff Mandel of Law Forward for being with us here today on the first day of the Supreme Court's term with their incredibly important amicus brief. We'll put a link to that brief in our show notes for today so you can find it. Folks, when we're coming back, we're talking Brewers with Civic Media's very own Mike Clemens. He's got some interviews with both Murphy and that other guy that used to manage the Brewers that's now in Chicago. Yeah, all that and so much more coming up next right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Stay tuned.
Reach, engage, grow with Civic Media. Log on civicmedia.us/advertise.
Does a 2025 federal law cut funding for some emergency broadcast alerts? Yes. A law signed by President Donald Trump on July 24th rescinds $9 billion, including $1.1 billion from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, or CPB. CPB, which funds NPR, PBS, and affiliates, announced it would shut down. Smaller rural stations rely heavily on CPB for weather and emergency alerts. Wisconsin stations got $8.5 million in 2024. The cuts led to a back and forth between Representative Derek Van Orden and Senator Tammy Baldwin on X over whether emergency broadcast alerts would be affected. I'm Trisha Young for Wisconsin Watch. Fact briefs are bite-sized fact checks of trending claims produced by Wisconsin Watch and GigaFact. Read more at wisconsinwatch.org.
Powered by friendship, fun, and manager Murph's Pocket Pancakes, the Milwaukee Brewers have a new franchise regular season record of 97 wins. Congratulations.
Unreal.
Now it's on to the postseason.
The summer of Sal, maybe the fall of Freeland.
Catch all the action on your station for the Brewers in October. 107.7 FM, 1450 AM, WRCE.
Hey there, Wisconsin. Tom Hartman here. Democracy is not a spectator sport, so join me each and every weekday right here on Civic Media for the Tom Hartman program from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Covering the news of the day and sharing ways for you to get off the sidelines and get active in your community, because change starts with you. Get involved and tune in to the Tom Hartman program Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. right here on your local Civic Media radio station.
This is Robert Pilot, host of Native Roots Radio. On our show, we talk about Native issues like treaties, protecting Mother Earth, and holding our elected officials accountable. You'll also hear from Turtle Island voices like Arvina Martin, State Representative Heather Keeler, Ruth Anna Buffalo, Dr. Anthony Stately, State Senator Mary Kunish, Robert Lilligren, and Bob Blake. Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Native Roots Radio, weeknights at 8 on your local Civic Media radio station.
Drivers, Austin Cindric here. As a NASCAR Cup Series driver of the number 2 Discount Tire Ford Mustang, there's a few rules of the road I like to tell my family and friends. Tire pressure is critical to safety because underinflated tires are more likely to fail. Plus, properly inflated tires will give you better gas mileage. Make sure to check your tire pressure at least once a month or stop by a local tire retailer for an air check.
A message from the U.S. Tire Manufacturers Association.
As Wisconsin is dropping a line in your favorite fishing spot, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Swinging a drive, right center and deep. Get up! Get out of here! Go! Fielder! Here it is! Swinging a drive, the center and deep. Way back! Get up! Get up! Get out of here! And go!
I certainly hope I'll be saying a lot of get up, get up, get out of here this afternoon. The Brewers, of course, up one on their I-94 rivals, the Chicago Cubs in the NLDS. Game 2, first pitch just after 8 p.m. tonight. I'm going to be there with my dad for his birthday and a big old group of friends who are also baseball fanatics. And I've got a man that knows not just about baseball, but our sports reporter extraordinaire here on Civic Media, Mike Clemens. Welcome back to the show, Mike.
Hi, Maggie.
Great to have you. You had a chance to talk with Craig Counsell and Pat Murphy after the game where they beat the Cubs. I was at a wedding with my MLB up, basically watching the game as I was at this wedding this weekend. You got some great interview, some great moments with Craig Counsell. You asked him about the team's reaction to their loss, the Cubs' reaction to their big loss. Let's take a listen to what you got here, Mike. Cut 8.
Okay. All right. You know, look, the game got away from us early, so it's not like it did, right? It got away from us. So, and it's a loss, and you move on from it quickly. There's no penalty. There's no, it's one loss. It doesn't count for more how you lose. We didn't lose well, but sometimes, you know, not, you know, a close game could have cost us some pitching type stuff too. So we lost and you move on. That's how the clubhouse felt.
How did you think the clubhouse felt, Mike? You were there talking with them.
Well, you know, the thing is that Craig Counsell used a pitcher, Matthew Boyd, who'd only had about 3 days rest. And then he was questioned about that because Boyd gets out there and he tells Craig, no, I'm fine. No, let's go. Let's go with this. Well, he's out there, and now Freddie Peralta gave up a home run to Michael Busch. He's great. But then Freddie settled in and got nine strikeouts. He tied a record set by Don Sutton, you know, and Yovani Gallardo and Brandon Woodruff for most strikeouts in a playoff game. The Brewers, they respond in the bottom of the first and score six runs. And
incredible.
I'm objective about this, but these guys, they keep on, they kept on hitting the ball, you know, where there weren't fielders. It was hysterical. Yeah. They put up 6-1 by the end of the first inning, and they retired Boyd. They went through three pitchers before, first or second inning. So, Craig thought he was going to pull a fast one on the Brewers and maybe save his pitchers because he just got through a series at home against San Diego, and he got pretty testy after being asked about this.
Yeah, I thought it was a little disrespectful to the Brewers. I was like, you're going to throw this guy in there? But, hey, we'll hit him. Check out when Mike asked Counsell about the decision to put Boyd on the mound with only 3 days rest. Take a listen here, folks.
Craig, even though he threw 58 pitches, is 3 days rest always that dicey sort of situation no matter what because it's so unusual for pitchers? We usually see the stats don't look good after 3 days.
Yeah, I mean, we picked Matt Boyd to pitch. I don't know what to say. He pitched. He pitched. It didn't go well. We got to make decisions. We went with Matt. We're very comfortable. I was very comfortable putting Matt Boyd on the mound today. Whole organization was comfortable putting Matt Boyd on the mound.
Yeah. Good one, Mike. I love seeing him squirm. What about the pitching tonight? A lot of folks were looking for Priester to take the mound, and instead we got Ashby getting the call to start out the game, usually in relief. What do you think about that decision from Murphy on the Brewers' side of the V for this second game?
It's curious because Quinn Priester, this 24-year-old who they put in, and he ended up having a streak where every time he pitched for the Brewers, they had 19 consecutive wins. And I talked to him on Friday in the locker room. You know, these guys have been coming in every day. I mean, I saw Jackson Chourio leaving the parking lot at 6:30 on Friday night on their day off. They're there every day. And Priester thought he was going to get the start tonight because Brandon Woodruff is down. And then yesterday, Murph announced, no, we're going to go with Aaron Ashby, the lefty, and he'll do what they call the opener, where he maybe just pitch an inning or two. They've done that a couple of times. And then maybe they'll bring in Priester after that. So that's what the thought is going in there.
Really interesting. Here is what Murph had to say about Ashby opening, not Priester.
Murph, what are your pitching plans?
Yeah, Ashby's going to start. No, I don't know if Priester will be next. I really don't.
I thought that was interesting, like the hedging there itself. Also, Pat gave you, Mike, an update on Chourio, which is every Brewers fan's top of mind question in this moment. How is Jackson doing? Let's take a listen to what Pat's update was.
Yeah, I think just, again, like all the outings leading up throughout the years, I guess, it's kind of just been get outs. So whether that's in the first inning or the fourth, fifth, seventh, whenever it is, I think they've made it clear that your job's just to get outs. And then when they ask you to stop getting outs, that's when you stop.
That was Ashby talking about the fact that he's going to be opening tonight. Kind of a typical response from a pitcher, like, hey, not my call. I just go out there and try to get some outs on the board. And now here's Pat Murphy talking about Jackson Chourio's status. Take a listen.
The MRI came back, and we still – it's inconclusive, and it's not a serious hamstring strain, but it's not necessarily something that won't limit him. So we're going to kind of see how he feels. He's going to go through some testing, and if he feels anything – we're going to shut it down.
Here's the Chourio storyline, Maggie. You know, he had a hamstring injury this summer, and after the game said, I don't think it's that bad. Well, he ended up missing a month, and he is extremely valuable to Pat Murphy and the organization. I mean, he's, you know, this is the kid, the 20-year-old that they paid, you know, an 8-year contract to. So when he runs to first base after, like, getting his third hit in the game to beat out the throw, comes up and winces a little bit. Murphy was out there right away, and he pulled him. Like, I don't want, you know, I want to rest you and make sure we got you for the rest of the series or the next series after that.
Yeah, Mike, no question that every Brewers fan agreed with Pat. We know how important Churio is. Just those three hits in one inning. I mean, oh my gosh, this guy can make miracles happen on the baseball diamond. Folks, you can hear from Mike all season long for all of the seasons. Badgers, Bucks, of course, our Brewers, and our beloved Packers. Stay tuned, folks. We got, who's up next? We've got Pete Schwabba with Nightlight next. So stay tuned here on the Civic Media Radio Network. That does it for me. Take care, y'all.
This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. President Trump told reporters he'd invoke the Insurrection Act and deploy the military if there's violence and if state and local officials, in his view, quote, hold him up.
I think that's all insurrection. I really think that's really criminal insurrection.
A federal judge blocked the deployment of federal troops to Portland, Oregon. A separate judge declined to immediately block deployment of troops to Chicago. The Senate voting on a bill that could reopen the government. The president said there were talks with Democrats, but House Speaker Hakeem Jeffries said there were no talks. Indirect talks are underway in Egypt between Israel and Hamas, focused on the first phase of the U.S. proposal to release hostages and end fighting. Washington, D.C. police said they found more than 200 devices in a tent outside St. Matthew's Cathedral Sunday before the annual Supreme Court Red Mass, and that the man arrested had writings revealing his animosity towards the church, the Jewish faith, members of the court, and ICE. This is ABC News.